Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show, and today I have a great guest on. She is an author. She works with hospice. She's an intuitive spiritual counselor. She teaches meditation, intuitive development, and she really does what's called after-death communication, and her name is Terry Daniel. So, Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Terry, what we're going to do so that all of the people who are listening kind of get to know a little bit about you, if you can just give us kind of like a brief history as to what prompted you to get... Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Nancy's Metaphysical World and More, and as I was talking... My guest name is Terry Daniel, and she's an author. She's a hospice worker. She also does intuitive spiritual counseling. She teaches meditation, intuition development, and she does after-death communication. So, again, Terry, welcome back to the show.
Hi. Hi. So, in answer to your original question, I always have been somewhat of an intuitive and interested in metaphysical study since I was a teenager. And I was reading tarot cards since I was a young woman as well. So I was always very tuned into all of this anyway. What really elevated my intuition and my ability is my son, who was born in 1990, was diagnosed with a life-threatening illness when he was 10. He died when he was 16, and part of this illness caused him to lose the ability to speak. So during the last few years of his life, he and I began to really communicate telepathically because he couldn't talk. And at the same time that that was happening, I was working as a tarot reader at a metaphysical bookstore and was really tuning in deeper and deeper all the time. And I began channeling and met up with a couple of my guides. And all of this all started to happen during this three-year period before my son died. Well, in the last year, I have many friends who are psychics and have readings with them often. And the readings were saying to me that I would be writing a book with my son and talking with him after he died. Well, I wasn't surprised to hear that because I have always been a writer by profession, but I was surprised that he started talking to me 30 minutes after he died. It happened very quickly, and he was incredibly articulate, and that was 2.5 years ago, and we are now working on our second book together.
The name of the first book, though, let's talk a little bit about that because you really go into detail about what happened, you know, mm-hmm. and everything, I'm sure. So the name of the book is called Swan in Heaven.
Mm-hmm. A Swan in Heaven. And the reason it's called A Swan in Heaven. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you why.
Well, it's, you know, people always ask me that. When he was 11 years old, I asked him if he could be any animal, what would he be? And he said, a swan. And I thought that was the strangest thing for an 11-year-old boy, because you'd expect a boy to say a dinosaur or a dog or a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
But he said a swan, and I didn't even think he knew what a swan was, and I was pretty sure he'd never actually seen one. So I kept asking him, are you sure it's a swan? And he said, yes, absolutely, he was sure. So I got a tattoo of a swan on my shoulder, and I started mm-hmm. to study what does swan mean, what does it mean in mythology, what does it mean in different spiritual traditions, and I was completely stunned when I discovered that it means the ability to travel between worlds, between dimensions, particularly in the swan medicine cards. There's a story about little swan that is able to travel between worlds and open an opening of psychic communication. So my son's soul knew even then that we would be doing this sort of communicating between worlds with each other.
Mm-hmm. Terry, don't you think that a lot of the children of today are very, very intuitive, and they really are here to try to teach us more than us try to teach them?
I think that's probably true of all children in any time in history, because they're new. You know, they've just come here from the higher realm, and they are more aware of our soul contracts than we are, because we've been here for a long time, and of course we forget about the pre-birth agreement. But the new souls coming in are pretty much fresh from heaven, if you will, and they still remember what our agreements are supposed to be. So they know that they're here as part of a plan that a soul group has created for learning. So I think that's true for all children. Of course, as they get older, they forget little by little, as we all do.
I think we need to keep reminding them and ourselves that it's really kind of right there in our own answers. We just have to trust it and go with it.
Well, we have to trust them, don't we? You know, because the children tell us. I mean, my son, when he was 4 years old, used to tell me that he came from Jupiter. And he had this whole story about his other family on Jupiter and what they did there all day long, and that he'd be going back there very soon. And he would tell me about this place where people go when they die that he called Ghost City. And when you go to Ghost City, it's like you go to college and you learn things. And he was always telling me, this is when he was 4, 5, 6 years old, that he was going to go to Ghost City and to Jupiter, where he would be with his other family, and that he would be going there very soon. So I was fascinated by this, and of course I encouraged him to tell me about it. And I would say, when are you going back? And he would say, in a few years. And I would say, can I come with you? And he'd say, I don't know. He didn't say no. He didn't say yes. He said, I don't know. And I think what that meant was kind of like, I don't know. It depends on you. You know, are you going to be able to do the work and open up your conduit so that you can come with me? And I actually did. And so I am kind of, you know, these are the two worlds that we're in.
It's, you know, and it's pretty interesting because, Terry, a lot of people, when their children start to talk about other things that they know about, other planets, other places, you know, they're starting to wake up better now and encourage them like you did. But before, that really didn't happen. They say, oh, no, no, don't tell anybody. You know, got to be quiet. You know, they don't want to be weird. You don't want to be different. You don't want to be strange. So you got to, you know, hush, hush. But today we're not doing that because we're actually more ahead of the game even than when I was a child. Because when I was a child, I know my angels wouldn't let me say what I knew because they were trying to protect me the whole time. And then finally I found out all the reasons. But when I was a child, you know, if I had said, you know, so-and-so is going to die, they would look at me and go, you can't say that, or how do you know that? And then as soon as I would start to say something, they would hush me. But my angels wouldn't let me say anything. They would tell me it really wasn't my concern, that it had already been agreed upon, and I needed to leave it, that they were going to a much better place. And I would hear that constantly because I used to know when people were going to die. And so, you know, it was kind of different. But I think children are very, very in tune, and I think the encouragement of keeping them in tune really is a good way to raise kids of today, because we're trying to get back to what we know. That's why that change is supposed to be coming for 2012. You know, so, but when it comes to your son, now you said before he had died that he could not talk, but as a spirit, he came through loud and clear. So, Terry, what were some of the things that he told you about?
Well, he told me, and he still does, he told me about everything. The book, the first half of the book is kind of a little background on our life and on him, and the second half of the book is mostly his messages about birth, death, and the journey of the soul, and also after-death communication. I'll tell you one thing. I'll read you a little short paragraph from the book, if that's okay.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
When he died, when he actually took his last breath, I was not in the room because I was busy, you know, cleaning the house and talking on the phone and doing the things that mothers do. And So I wasn't there for the last breath. And I have since learned as a hospice worker that that's pretty typical. They generally wait for their loved ones to leave the room because we do hold them here. So after he died, when I began communicating with him, I asked him what it was like in those last hours, and this is what he said. He said, "I wasn't really there during those hours. I was barely attached to my body, and I was experiencing the most beautiful sensation of release. Nothing could have pulled me back, not the sound of the vacuum or the phone ringing or your voice. I was like a baby bird coming out of an egg, but I didn't have to crack the egg. It opened itself very slowly, and it let larger and larger amounts of light in, and I just floated up out of the egg, and there were people helping to lift me up. I was aware of the earth world, of you and the house and everything around me, but it was very far off in the distance, and I wasn't paying attention to it. All I cared about was being gently pulled out of this egg because the feeling was so beautiful and relaxing. The last time you saw me breathe, I was held to the egg by the tiniest membrane, and then I was free." So that's the kind of stuff that started for me.
That's pretty, you know, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, I think that, Terry, a lot of people have the fear of dying or fear of death. And I think, you know, partly of what your son is telling you should help people to understand that it's not anything that's horrible and that it feels really good and that it's a great release.
Well, and that is really what the purpose of our work together has now become. Because as I've, you know, written this book and I'm now working on my second book, which is all about exactly what you said about releasing the fear of death, as I'm working with people in my workshops and teaching, that seems to be what the need really is. And when I teach now and when I write, I never even think about it because Danny is guiding me and also the other teachers who are with him on the other side. And so my guides just speak through me all the time. I used to really put my brain into it and, you know, work out an agenda and what I was going to say, and I have learned not to do that because my guides, including my son, are so integrated with me now that I can't tell if it's me talking or them talking. And where this whole thing has led is that I've started this thing called Afterlife Awareness Education, and it's pretty unique, and that's what I seem to be teaching now, and I feel like I'm just hands off. I have nothing to do with this. They're doing all the work, the body and the mouthpiece, you know.
And usually it works best like that.
Yes, it does.
It really does. Just to allow it. You know, it's really funny, Terry, you know, because when I wrote my book, because I wrote my autobiography, but I didn't want to write it because it was like, it's a story. It's a story of my life. But, you know, it turned out to be actually a self-help book for anybody who reads it, you know, according to what I had gone through. But, you know, I'm not a writer. I would talk to my angels and say, hey, you know, I don't know what to say. So if you want this done, you're going to have to do it. And then the first time I sat down at the computer, which I could lock up in a matter of seconds, it was like 10 o'clock at night. And the next time I looked at the clock, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. And I had tons and tons of stuff written. I had no idea what it said.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't
that,
so you
know, they came
you look
through,
at,
yeah.
If you look at Abraham and Esther Hicks, if you ever read any of their books about how they started, she used to start getting messages from him one word at a time. And she would go to the typewriter or computer or whatever they had then, and she'd write one or two words. And it took years and years and years before she started to receive long passages like that. And now it's with her, they've become completely integrated, too. And there's no, what I've learned, and one of the, you know, Danny tells me a lot about what it's like on the other side. And, of course, there's no linear time there. It used to be I would sit down and I would ask for a message to come, and it would take a few seconds or a minute. But now it starts coming before I even finish asking the question. I'm sure you know what that's like. It's like you think the thought and you get the answer at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Is that how it happens for you, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. It's a lot of fun because you sit there, and then it's like your logic side kicks in and goes, how did I know that? You know, but if you just kind of get logic out of the way, it works really, really well if you just allow and relax, you know. Now, the second book that you're writing, Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. Now, it's supposed to be coming out the spring of 2010. Is that correct?
So they tell me.
Okay.
That's the date.
All right. You better believe them because they're going to be right there. Now, if somebody wants to get your first book, A Swan in Heaven, how did they get that, Terry?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, or you can go to my website, which is swaninheaven.com, and you can order it there as well.
Okay.
So
and when your new book,
the internet.
Okay, when your new book comes out, they can get it the same way, I'm assuming,
yes,
right?
Yes, it'll be on my website. My main website is afterlifeawareness.com. And from there,
okay,
you
so
can
we're gonna...
go to all the other websites and the books and everything. So afterlifeawareness.com is the best one to start with.
Okay, we're probably going to give that out a couple times before our hour's up. But now you also have some presentations that you're doing. So can you explain to the listeners, you know, kind of like where you're going to be in case some of them are in that area and they may want to come to see you?
Sure. I'm going to be in Salem, Oregon, and then in Northern California, Santa Rosa and Sebastopol, California, and Santa Cruz, California, and Los Angeles during the last 2 weeks
okay.
of May. That's the only thing I've got booked
okay.
right now.
And they can, and that's on your website, too, right?
That's all on the website, too. And so the best way to reach me would be to just go to, you know, afterlifeawareness.com and just send me an email from there, and I can send you all that information. And the workshops
okay.
are, you know, what you were saying before about getting the logic out of the way, this is what we do in the workshop, is I teach
mm-hmm.
after-death communication, but it starts with intuition development, of course. And so we do a lot of guided meditations and exercises to get people to kind of click into that space where you're not using your logic, where you're just allowing
mm-hmm.
anything to come through that comes through. And we do this by, you know, some guided meditation, some relaxation exercises, and very slowly and gently stepping out of the body, basically, and opening its conduit. And, you know, everybody is receiving all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't believe that what they're receiving is real. And every one of your listeners has had an experience of receiving some sort of message from guides, loved ones, teachers, anybody, but they shrug it off and they think it's coincidence. Or, you know, they get
mm-hmm.
we get stuck in dreams. We get stuff all the time, but we don't believe it is what it is. And that's our, you know, the first thing that trips us up.
Terry, why do you think people have such a hard time believing in what they're getting?
Well, mostly it's the religion that they were raised with.
Okay.
It's just like you were saying, you know, when we were kids growing up, if you had an invisible friend, your parents told you, no, that's not real. You don't have an invisible friend. Stop talking like that, you know. Or they put people in psychiatric hospitals. So, you know, our society tells us that we're not allowed, well, our society tells us that we're crazy if we talk to angels or dead people. But our, you know, Western religion also tells us that not only is this not possible, but it's actually sinful. So we have these
mm-hmm.
beliefs that were given to us in our culture that stop it right in its tracks. And one of
yes,
the things
yeah,
we
I
do
was
in
what...
the workshop, yeah, is we have one
Go, no,
piece in the workshop where we actually work on undoing some of those ideas that we got growing up about this kind of communication being impossible or sinful.
Mm-hmm. And Terry, has anyone ever come to you, knowing what you do, and said to you, you may think I'm a little strange, but I keep, you know, hearing dead people talk to me?
All the time. All the time.
Okay. So when people approach you or they talk with you and they say that, what do you say back to them? Because it's happened to me a lot, and, you know, and I just kind of go with the flow. But what would be one of the comments that you may say back?
Oh, I always say, well, you know, of course I don't think you're strange. And if you're interested in communicating with these beings who are trying to reach you, you know, we can develop that ability. It's very doable. You can do whatever you want with it. You can choose to tune it out, or you can choose to follow it and see where it leads you. Usually, if the person is talking to me, they've already chosen to follow it, which is why they have found me. So, and that's exactly what we teach people in the workshop is, you know, how to make that communication more clear. And who are these people talking to me? I have one student who has been seeing people for years, just different faces, different beings that are coming to her. And she asks me who they are. And I say, well, I can't really tell you who you are, but I can tell you how to find out who they are. Because they are part of your soul family. They're your guides, their ancestors, or departed loved ones. The only way to really know who they are is for you to have a conversation with them. So I can teach you how to tune into their essence and receive whatever messages they're trying to get through to you, because they are trying to communicate with us. I always feel like, you know, around every person is a whole group of other people jumping up and down, waving their arms, trying to get our attention.
Yeah, like when I'm doing the readings for people, you know, and I don't tell people I'm a channeler because I'm truly not. You know, they just kind of come through when they want to come through, and that's okay with me. But when I'm, you know, doing like a tarot reading or a counseling session or whatever, and like you said, they're jumping up and down, waving like, here I am, here I am, let them know. You know, and so I'm very careful because sometimes people aren't ready to hear that, hey, maybe, you know, your mom is standing next to you and she just wants you to know that she's there. You know, so I kind of work it in there and see what they say. And then when they, you know, give me an answer and I know that it would be all right with them, then I will mention the fact that, by the way, you know, and they look at me like, really? And it's like, yeah, you know, it really is. And you can do it too. But I mean, I don't teach it. So, you know, I can't tell them. So now, Terry, I can send everybody to you.
And I don't do readings, so I can send other people to you. I really don't feel like I can do readings. I can't see somebody's grandmother standing behind them. I mean, I probably could, but I just haven't really focused on that. That's really not the form that my work seems to want to take. It seems like my work is supposed to be more about teaching people how to do that for themselves. And a lot of people ask me to do readings, and I say, you know, I don't really do that, but I can do it with tarot cards because I've been doing tarot for so many years, and I realized that in recent years as I was doing tarot readings that all of a sudden I was channeling along with the cards, and the cards just sort of give me a hint of something.
Right. Yeah, it's really funny. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, it used to be I would let the cards lead the way and give me all the information. Now, when I do a reading with somebody, I'll just start channeling, and then I'll just let the cards just sort of help me along. Where it used to be the cards were the main thing and the intuition was secondary, now the intuition is primary and the cards are secondary.
Yeah, it's really funny for me, especially because I get like 50 words a second coming through me when I'm doing a reading. And I can decipher them, but it takes forever to do that, you know. So I look at the cards and it gives me instant focus. And I mean instant focus. But I had used my original deck for like 25 years, Terry, so most of my pictures are all missing. And I still could read them, but I stopped. Yeah, you know, that's after 25 years of usage, and it killed me, but I had to stop reading them because people would be looking at the cards and not hearing a word I'm saying because they were trying to figure out how I'm getting, what I'm getting, on a card that has no picture, you know, so I, you know, got another deck, same kind of deck, but it was really funny. So I put those on the website so people could see that that's how much I use them. But it's really funny because it, what happens to me a lot, and I'm going to ask if this happens to your channeling. It's like all of a sudden there's like time stands still and there's like, you know, no time at all, but yet time continues. Okay. When I'm doing readings all of a sudden, I notice I'm being pulled out of my body. And I have to pull myself back into my body just as the reading is going to end. So I still have no idea what I'm saying to the people. but it's coming through. You know, and so it's kind of different. And I record mine, so, you know, they can say, hey, Nancy, this is what you said, and I have to go, did I? You know, but it's kind of fun like that. But let's talk a little bit more, Terry, about you, because you do teleclasses. Are you still doing teleclasses?
Yeah, I mean, we just did a six-week teleclass. We just did the fifth one yesterday, and I'll start another one up sometime in the summer. And in the teleclasses, it's the same thing as my workshops, only on a conference call. And it's, you know, the workshops are 2 to 3 hours. The conference call is about an hour and a half, so it's pretty condensed. And we have 6 different topics. We start out with the first topic, which I call First There Was the Word, and that begins with unhooking everybody from the beliefs of their cultural programming. For example, one of the reasons why people have trouble doing their own channeling is because of what they've seen in movies. They expect the table to fly across the room and the house to shake and the lights to flicker, and so they're expecting that. Or they expect to see apparitions, or they expect to hear fully formed words. And so we work on looking at where did we get these ideas that the house is going to shake. And sometimes that will happen with some, you know, clairvoyance, but there's different kinds of clairvoyance. And most people don't have those kinds. So I kind of try to reprogram and say, you know, don't expect to see a picture of your dead mother in your mind. Don't expect to hear actual words. What you will probably get is a symbol or a feeling or a thought in your mind, because it feels more like thoughts occurring in your mind rather than hearing words from outside of you. So in the beginning of this training, that's what we do, is we look at all our expectations, all the beliefs that we have that tell us that we can't do it, and we do some really fun little processes to get rid of some of that stuff.
And then when you, so you do it for, it's like a 6 week class.
Yeah, so it's a teleclass, a 6 week class. So that's what we start with. And by the time we get to the 6th week, everybody has received some sort of communication from a guide or a loved one on the other side. One of the classes is focusing just on channeling. One of the classes focuses on just understanding what a guide is. Because when you channel, you may or may not meet a particular guide. You may just get information that, as far as you can tell, doesn't come from a particular being. It's just a receiving of information. Meeting guides is actually a separate thing. It's all connected, of course, but I break it down into these 6 different areas, and we work with each of these areas. We just did one last night, which was called Talking to Heaven. And I have this beautiful meditation where I lead people in the higher realms. This meditation was given to me by my son. And, you know, when I do this in a class full of people, I would say 95% of the people make some sort of contact with a loved one on the other side or a guide.
When people first meet you, Terry, and want to talk with you, are they kind of eager, or are they maybe a little afraid of what you may say? Can you maybe explain a little bit how that works?
Most of the people who want to talk to me about this already know who I am, you know, or, you know, I meet them at my workshops and stuff. So they're all very eager. They're really, really, really nice. I mean, the only people that I've encountered that really come from fear, believe it or not, are the hospice workers. And the clergy, the 2 groups of people that you would think would be very active, you know, are the ones that are the most resistant. And I say this with love, because I love hospice. And yet I have found so much resistance from the hospice community to what I do. Because in hospice work, we are trained not to talk about anything spiritual or metaphysical, and not to talk about the afterlife. In fact, I've been in hospice training in 2 states, and it was the same in both of them, and other hospice workers will agree with this. If your patient or the patient's family says to you, what do you think happens when we die? you're not really supposed to answer that question. You're supposed to turn it back to them and say, well, I don't know. What do you think? And they'll say, well, I don't know. That's why I asked you. What do you think? And you just go back and forth. And you're really not supposed to talk to them about that. And I find that very disturbing. So that's one of the reasons that hospice people, unless they're really spiritual, really aren't real interested in what I'm doing. And I've run into that a lot. The other thing that I've run into is the group of people that I want to work with the most are bereaved parents, because I have lost a child, too. And there are a couple of groups in America that are the national grief groups for bereaved parents that I've spoken to their local chapters and had a wonderful response. But on the national level, they refuse to let me speak at their conferences because they're afraid that this kind of thing will upset people. And it will upset some of the people, but it will also give comfort to a great many people. So, you know, I run into that, and that's really hard for me because it's like, well, the people who don't want to hear about this don't have to come to my workshop. But what about the people who really want this? Why would you deprive them of that? So that's a little bit of a political conflict I have out there in the world. There are, in answer to your question, yes, there are a lot of people who are afraid of me.
Just like psychics get a bad name, but, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
Now, you also do conversations in the spiritual voice, and you do different classes with that also, don't you? Or is it like a different way that you do it? Can you explain that maybe to the listeners?
Yeah, I do a lot of different kinds of teaching. You know, I teach a tarot class. I do seasonal ceremonies like, you know, winter and summer solstice and the fall and spring equinoxes. I teach about the chakras. So in conversations and spiritual voice, it's just kind of an overview for people who might want to invite me to speak about various different things. And the reason that I seem to have this diverse curriculum, if you will, is that this is what my guides are giving me. You know, I'm really interested in the chakras. I do chakra-clearing meditations. And I really do kind of function as a healer. And I don't have it really narrowed down to, no, I don't just do after-death communications. I do all kinds of connecting to the higher realms through the various tools that we have. The chakras are tools that we can use to get to the higher realms. It's all about connecting to our guides and to the higher realms, which we call heaven, which is not the same as biblical heaven. And, you know, the energy that, you know, some people will call it God, some people will call it the light, call it whatever you like. The one thing I can tell you that it's not is a judgmental God that most of us were taught when we were children. It's definitely not that. There's no judgment anywhere in the universe. And here on Earth, when we made the decision to come here and be human on Earth, we were not intended to come here and be completely alone. We are still in touch with our mother, father, creator in the higher realms, and those are angels, those are guides, those are ancestors and loved ones, all sort of fueled by this life force, light energy that we call God. And so I teach all the different ways to connect to that.
Yeah, and I think that's important, Terry, because some people may be able to pick up one form better than another, or, you know, they may be able to feel, you know, better within themselves, choosing one, you know, one way over the other. So the more that you can put out there, the more that you can teach the different areas, the different realms, all of that, I think really is what would help the people the most. Because, you know, they're hungry right now. They're hungry to learn. I mean, we have this 2012 thing coming. My angels have always told me 2010.
I really like what you said, because sometimes I wonder why I teach so many different things, and it seems to me that I should be more tightly focused on a particular thing, but it doesn't seem to be working that way. And you really explained it to me. Thank you for that, is that everybody will receive the information in the way that is the most comfortable for them. So if there are people who are familiar with chakras, they'll get there that way. If there are people familiar with tarot cards, they'll get there that way. We're all going to the same place. So you just really helped me realize, figure out why I do have so many different avenues that I can share with people. And people really are hungry because we've been in the dark ages for a very long time in terms of our spiritual beliefs. The Western Judeo-Christian thinking about birth and death, in my opinion, has kept us separate from the energy of God and the energy of love rather than connecting us to it. And I think that's what so many people are beginning to figure out is that, well, wait a minute, I don't want to be separate. There's no such thing as a Christian or a Jew or an atheist. There's no such thing as we're over here and heaven is over there. It's all connected. It's all interdependent. And once you start to realize that, you lose judgment immediately. You can no longer live in a world where you pass judgment on anything because you realize that everything happens for a reason and every tiny little movement in the universe creates a reaction somewhere else in the universe. And it's all for the purpose of growth and expansion. So even a really tragic event like the death of a child or 100,000 people getting wiped out in a tsunami has a purpose in moving the entire organism forward. And the more you start to get that idea, which is really what oneness is about, the less upset you get about these difficult experiences that we have on Earth.
Hi everyone. Terry, when we were disconnected, the question that I posed to you that you did not hear was a lot of people are being told many different stories about 2012 and what to expect. My angels talked to me about 2010 all the way through to 2015. And my question was, does your son or your guides or anyone, Terry, come through and tell you anything about what is to be expected for, say, 2012 or what's leading up to 2012?
Yes, and you're probably not going to like what I'm going to say. Here's what they tell me, because people ask me this all the time. They say, there's no such thing as 2012. There is no time. Time doesn't exist in the higher realms. All that's happening is that, consciousness is expanding. It always has been. There's quite a big leap of expansion right now because we have technology to spread information. Right now, you and I are using, about 10 different kinds of technology to have this conversation. The more that communication can be spread on Earth, the faster consciousness is going to grow. So if somebody says, yes, there's this huge movement right now of consciousness expanding, in this generation or in this decade or in this century, well, that's because we have more communication than we did a century ago. So what I've been told is that it doesn't matter if it's 2010 or 2012 or 3033, because time really doesn't matter. It's just the continued growth of consciousness that is always happening. It's just happening really fast right now. I saw a statistic the other day that said Google gets asked something like 8 million questions an hour or something. I don't know what it is. And so, you kind of have to wonder, well, who were we asking these questions of before we had Google? And, we weren't. There was no place that we can. So look at how fast information is spreading now. That's tremendous. And so that is what is causing this huge leap of consciousness. And so it only makes sense that more and more people are going to get more aware as we can talk to each other and share with each other more. My guides love technology. And they're always giving me analogies about how the internet is like the higher realm, and communicating digitally is very similar to what we do when we're communicating telepathically. When you send an email, you don't really see that email going anywhere, you know, from point A to point B. You just know it's going to get there. And that's the similar kind of trust that we're supposed to have when we're working with our guides. So they give me analogies like this all the time, and that's why when, you know, when they're asked about 2012, they keep bringing it back to technology.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people are saying many, many different things. And so people in general, you know, are looking at the doom and gloom. And to me, it's not doom and gloom. It's growth. It's people getting to a higher level. It's people, you know, allowing themselves to be really all they can be without a lot of other things saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. When in reality, we really can. And it seems to me like, you know, knowing that this is kind of a change that's coming in, people need to just relax and not look at the doom and gloom so much.
Well, what is the doom? I mean, I don't even pay much attention to that. What is the doom and gloom? You know, is the doom and gloom just, yeah, well, things are going to change? And I never look at doom and gloom anyway.
Me neither. I don't do that either. But a lot of people, you know, they're going, oh, God, we're hearing about all these things that are going to happen. A lot of people are going to die and, you know, everything's going to go wrong. And it's like, well, maybe just relax, and maybe it won't be. Just like the, when the new millennium came in, everybody thought it was all going to go crazy and haywire, and it didn't.
Oh,
it just ran just as
time.
Smooth
yeah.
as it could have.
You know, they think that all the time about everything, and it's just, you know, in my opinion, it's just really silly. And you know what? If a meteor hits the Earth in 5 minutes, so what?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
that's
not
really
make
how,
much difference.
I mean, because if you have a view that there's more going on than just this physical existence, and if someone told me right now that in 5 minutes the Earth is going to explode,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't give it a second thought. I'd be like, oh boy, I wonder where we're going to go next.
See, there's also part of your, you put there, you said there is no death, pathways to conscious dying and conscious grieving. That's also something that you do. And I think it's important that people understand that there really is no death.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly,
when you're doing,
yeah. Go ahead.
When you're doing your classes, Terry, and like you said, the one in person where you go out and you do it, those are longer than the ones that are done by phone. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. If somebody wants to, you know, be part of your classes, whether they're by phone or in person, do they just go to your website?
Well, yeah, my website is sort of the, you know, the clearinghouse for everything. So you can go to afterlifeawareness.com, and there will be links to show you where all my workshops are, where the teleclasses are. The best way to stay in touch with me is to go to my website and sign up on my mailing list, and that way you'll always be informed of everything that I'm doing, because not everything, you know, gets up there on the website. So if you could just go to the website and click the mailing list link, that would be the best thing to do.
Okay.
And then I'll always send you updates on everything that's going on.
That's a good thing. You also have a part in there called Danny's Conversation.
Oh, the Danny Dialogue. Yeah, that's another really nice
that's
thing
it.
That your listeners might like. This is an online discussion group on Yahoo called the Danny Dialogue, and you can, again, find the link to that on the website. And we've got 63 members right now from all around the world, and these are all people who have had some sort of either a near-death experience or a visitation or after-death communication with someone on the other side, or they're just really interested. Many of them are bereaved and they've lost a child or a loved one, but it's a great group, and we have these incredible dialogues online about all the things that we're talking about here. And what I do is I will post a message from Danny or from my guides up there on that website, and then people can email back and forth and talk about it. And that's worked out really, really well. Everybody just loves that. So
is there
a lot of stuff?
Numbers?
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Oh, and that's good. The more, the better, actually. Is there a phone number, Terry, that people can contact you at, or do you prefer just the website?
I prefer the website, but that's okay. I'll give out my phone number. It's area code 541-549-4004.
Okay. Give it out one more time so people get it.
Sure. 541-549-4004.
Great. Now, you said that you started reading tarot cards at a very young age. About how old were you?
Well, I wasn't very young. I was trying to figure that out today. I think I was like 27 or something. It was 1982.
Okay.
Yeah, I was
just, and what prompted you to do that?
I used to go get readings with this wonderful man in California named Kit Wilkins. He was a psychic, and I don't know how I found him, but I would go to him for a reading once in a while, and he used tarot cards. And I was just so interested in what he was doing, and he kind of would teach me about the cards as we went along, and I just wanted to learn about it. It just felt like something that I could do. So I went and I bought the Mother Piece deck was the first one that I used, and I pretty much taught myself
cool.
through the Mother Piece book.
Yeah,
but
they're round. So
In case people
don't know, the Mother Piece, they're round. They look like discs, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very pretty. One of my friends used to read those, is how I know about them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very pretty. And they're very peaceful. That deck, when you touch it or you feel it, it's a very peaceful deck.
Yes, and their interpretations are very loving. And from a feminist, or I don't want to say feminist, but feminine point of view. And
mm-hmm.
it was a really good one to learn with. The very best book, though, if somebody wanted to learn, would be, it's called Tarot Reversals by Mary Greer. And I didn't do reversals until just a few years ago. I just ignored the upside down cards until I read the
mm-hmm.
book and understood it. So now, if you're going to learn, I would suggest people learn from that book so that they learn about reversals right from the beginning instead of 25 years later like I did.
Like I don't read reversals, and the only reason why I don't is because to me there's a lot of negative energy, and it usually comes up anyway, but the way that I do the readings is I try to make them very positive, truthful, but very positive,
mm-hmm.
So that people don't walk away going, oh my God, so I think it's important that it does come from the heart and it comes from love more than just somebody's ego, because I know a lot of readers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their messages aren't quite like they should be, but that's okay. That's their part. So when do you still do tarot readings for people now, Terry?
Oh, yeah. I do them all the time. And I do them for myself. And I actually just learned a really interesting little spread for after-death communication. This is really cool. I have to go. I've only done it once, and I don't remember it, so I am right now pulling out my notes so I can tell this to you because you might want to try this. I have little notes here. It's just, hold on a second. I'm just going to fold it up.
Okay.
It's just a four-card spread, and you just, oh, no, it's not four cards. It's a star. I guess I couldn't really describe it, but it's about your relationship with someone who's died, and you put two cards in the center as the significators, and one is the bereaved person, and one is the dead person, and then the cards are in a circle around there, and each one is, what do you learn from this experience? What gift does the departed person want to give you? What gift did you give them in this lifetime? It's really beautiful. So I'm going to study this one and start using this in my grief counseling with people.
That'd be neat. I think that would help people out a lot, because a lot of people, when somebody dies, they have some really hard times. It's like they're full of guilt, like, did I do enough? Did I not do enough? Is the person mad at me? What are they thinking? They need a little help with that.
Oh, yes, they do. And you can tell them what they're thinking and what the gifts are. Our guides want us to help people with this.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important. And in our society, in our culture, you know, there is nothing really adequate to help people deal with grief. It's, you know, thankfully we have hospice now and we have grief counseling, but it's just so, doesn't hold a candle to what people in many other cultures have in terms of helping mm-hmm. them deal with death. I have a friend in India, and he's been helping me with research for my new book, which is basically about overcoming the fear of death. And what I hear from people all the time is when you have a death in the family, you know, you always hear that people don't know what to say, and some people will avoid you, your friends won't, you know, they're so uncomfortable that people actually sort of shun you. And I hear stories like this all the time. And my friend in India was telling me that would be so unthinkable in India because they believe in reincarnation and they know that we don't die. And so when somebody mm-hmm. dies, when an old person dies, they have a huge celebration. And there are traditions, like if you see a funeral procession going down the street, like people carrying a coffin, mm-hmm. it is, according to the religion, you're supposed to walk alongside it for at least 40 mm-hmm. steps to show your respect. Where in America, mm-hmm. people would just turn around and run away and, you know, look the yeah. other way. So it's really interesting. I think we're so backwards and so far behind in this culture when it comes to this. We have a lot to learn, and hopefully we'll learn it from my next book.
The thing is, Terry, you've actually already said a lot. I'm sure that would help people out because, you know, just like you said, we do have a lot to learn. And the more that people can, you know, get into something and learn from it, the better off they will be because it just works better with their soul. Yeah. I mean, when we come here, we know at some point in time we have to leave. Okay, now our minds may not necessarily remember that point in time. You know, some people do, like your son, you know, but a lot of people tend to want to forget that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you come, you go. You don't really die. You just continue to grow is how I explain it to people because it makes more sense. I do not believe that you can only be given one life to get everything right. You'd have to be some super person who just, you know, doesn't sleep if that were the case.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly,
you know,
so right. You know, and that's why the one life idea is kind of mm-hmm. tied into the judgment idea. You really can't have that belief in one life or getting it right if you don't also have a belief in judgment. Getting what right? You know, there is
yeah.
no right or wrong. There's just this constant flow of expansion. But the idea of there being something right and something wrong tied to having only one life suggests that there's no do-over. This is it. You have to get it right. Well, who says what it is? And what
yeah.
does right actually look like? You know, some people will say that if you don't become a born-again Christian, then you didn't do it right. Or if you're gay, you
mm-hmm.
didn't do it right. So
right.
who on earth is making these judgments, you know?
Yeah, but you do. You hear that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other question I have, Terry, just before we're going to go. But before we go, please give out your website and your phone number and the name of your book out now and your book that's coming.
Okay. The best website to find everything is afterlifeawareness.com. My book is A Swan in Heaven, and you can find that at swaninheaven.com. But you can also get that through the Afterlife site. The new book is not even worth mentioning at this point because it's not even going to be out for many, many more months. It will be called Embracing Death, A New Look at Grief, Gratitude, and God. But if anybody wants access to all of this, the best way to get it would be to go to afterlifeawareness.com.
Okay. And do you want to give out your phone number again?
541-549-4004. And that's
okay.
Essential oil.
My question was going to be, a lot of times people come to me and they say, you know, I had a little baby that died. What was the point? You know,
mm-hmm.
why did the little baby have to be born? Now, I know you addressed that because I read part of your stuff. So what would you tell somebody if they came to you and said that?
Well, here's what I would go about it a little differently. What most people say to me in that context is they say, if there's a loving God that loves us, why would he let this happen? And my answer is, it depends what you think God is. Where did we get the idea that we are guaranteed a pain-free and conflict-free life? The idea of God is not something that's going to protect us from experience. The idea of God is something that's going to nurture our experience. So if you had a baby that died or any other tragic thing, this is not a random act of meaninglessness. There is a purpose to this. That child, the soul of that child, your soul, have made this plan long before that child ever came into the world, and you are connected to a very large soul family, and this death it's like a kaleidoscope. When you turn the thing on a kaleidoscope and it turns just the tiniest little bit, all the little pieces rearrange. So every action that happens causes a rearranging to happen in this rippling motion. The death of this child is a huge turn on the kaleidoscope, and everybody around you is going to change because of it. The reason for that death is to prompt that change. And then the person might say, well, I don't want anything to change. I want everything to stay exactly the way it is. And, you know, the answer to that is, you can't. It's a much bigger picture than just you and your life and your family and your body. When you realize that you are more a part of everything, then it's a lot easier to accept that these changes happen. I mean, that's a very, compacted way of saying it. If I was actually in a grief counseling session with somebody, I wouldn't say it exactly like that. But that would be the point that I'd want to make.
Yeah, and again, Terry, that point is very, very important for people to understand. And I have to apologize to you because of our connection going back and forth a little bit. But I think, what our listeners have learned from you today, Terry, is very worthwhile. Give out your website one more time so they can find you, and then we're going to have to say goodbye.
Okay, thank you. It's afterlifeawareness.com.
Great. Terry, thank you very much for taking the time to be on this show.
Thank you. It was a
pleasure.
And
when your other book comes out, let me know, and we'll get you back on again, okay?
Absolutely. Great. Thank you so much.
All right, Terry. You take care, and again, thanks. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and take care. We'll talk soon. Bye now.